Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Nigeria has suspended military activities in the Niger Delta region to pave way for dialogue with the Niger Delta Avengers militant group.
And so what are they avenging for? I think Buhari is just taking them for granted. He should smoke them out. These people are criminals. They are not fighting for the interests of Niger Delta people. These are criminals.
People living with albinism in Malawi are living under threat after being targeted for their body parts, which are used in magical potions and other ritual practice.
We are being targeted, we are being killed like any animal. And it has even complicated our day-to-day activities in terms of going to school, getting to work, and even trusting people around us.
Also on the program, university graduates in Ghana pondering on their future after failing to secure jobs.
There are expectations from home. Now you've graduated, responsibilities. You are expected to cater for yourself.
If you stay in the house, your family will be so disappointed in you for investing so much in you without bringing anything into the house, like a job and returns.
These stories and much more to come in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin the program in Nigeria, where President Muhammadu Buhari has directed a reduction in military activities in the Niger Delta region as the militant group Niger Delta Avengers continues to destroy oil installations in the region. Dialogue is to start immediately with the militants, and the National Security Advisor will head a panel to resolve the matter. As DW's Bello Muhammad reports from Port Harcourt, the government has called for a ceasefire with the militants to give dialogue a chance.
Since early this year, Nigeria's oil-rich Niger Delta has been facing attacks by a group known as Niger Delta Avengers. The group has threatened to disrupt oil production in Africa's top crude exporter. The latest situation regarding the attacks is considered to be the most deadly and destructive in the nation's oil industry since 2006 to 2009 insurgency. Apparently, President Buhari's administration is not only facing the Niger Delta Avengers, though the group is considered to be the most deadly and organized group, the government will also have to engage the Red Ebisu Water Alliance and the Niger Delta Liberation Force to stop attacks. However, Bemini Tanem, an elder in Niger Delta region, says there is no point to discuss with criminals.
The elders of the land, majority of the people in the Niger Delta, have said that they are not in support of what the so-called Avengers are doing. What are they avenging for? Jonathan was there as their brother. What did he do? And so what are they avenging for? I think Buhari is just taking them for granted. He should smoke them out. These people are criminals. They are not fighting for the interests of Niger Delta people.
In its initial step to contain the insurgency in the oil region, the administration of President Muhammadu Buhari opted to use the fire-for-fire approach, directing the Nigeria's military to pursue and crush these militants that have been hiding in the creeks of the Delta, bombing the oil facilities. However, in a change of strategy, the government said it was considering scaling down military operations in the offensive against the militants for about 2 weeks to allow for dialogue. Paul Aloysius, a Delta resident, has welcomed the peace talks.
There is no situation, irrespective of what happened, irrespective of who is involved, that cannot be resolved through dialogue. It is a welcome development, and I want to believe that the militants, they have the characteristics, they'll go to the table. If they don't go to the table, then apparently their demands or their actions remains what it is, criminal.
The government maintains that besides reaching out to the people in the area, it is also committed to beefing up security, working round the clock to minimize the losses arising from the attacks. It also plans to engage international oil companies to see what options exist for the planned dialogue.
Bello Mohammed reporting from Port Harcourt. So why has the government decided to change its approach of how to deal with the Niger Delta Avengers from military engagement to dialogue? A question I put to DW's Ben Shemang in Abuja.
Well, there is a mounting pressure here. People feel that the stick approach, talking of the war, talking of using military, is really not paying off. Because if you check, these Niger Delta Avengers are busy blasting pipelines, crude oil, refined oil, and the thing is affecting the environment. And the cleanup exercise is going to take a very long time.
And why had the government in the first place decided to deploy military personnel to deal with the Avengers? Is it that it had underestimated their strength?
Not really that it underestimated their strength. The military just felt that the softly approach should be the end thing. Traditional rulers made some appeals. Some youths are also saying the same thing. Even former militants of the Niger Delta, Emancipation for the Niger Delta Men, they are actually not backing this group. So they just felt if majority are saying, don't go into military activities with the militants, so be it. So it is now left for the communities that are saying that they are now ready to also convince these militants, their children, to drop the arms and simply embrace dialogue.
And how easy is it going to be to convince the militants to lay down their arms, you think?
There are ways a government will do. Talking of May 29, the president marked his first year in office, and he said there are alternative means of resolving the matter, that there will be a dialogue, and a dialogue has come to be. And we are seeing a situation where the National Security Advisor is going to head a dialogue. Talking of General Babagana Mungunu, he's going to head a panel to ensure that this dialogue takes place between the militants and the Nigerian authorities, the military, and everybody who is a stakeholder in this business. Even oil companies will have to contribute.
Tell us more about all these people going to be involved in the process of intensive dialogue. Do they share the same views of how peaceful that region should be because of its productivity and its importance to the country's economy?
Of course, even look at those who are involved in this dialogue. I've mentioned the National Security Advisor. You also have the Minister of State for Petroleum, Ibe Kachuku. He's a member. Then you also have the Minister of Niger Delta Ministry of Affairs, Minister Usani Uguru. He's a member. Traditional rulers, chiefs, youth, security agents, talking of Chief of Army Staff, Chief of Defense Staff, Navy, Air Force, they all are involved. Influential leaders, politicians, they all are involved. Religious leaders. So with these people coming on board, everybody saying, let's talk peace instead of the war, I think it's just a good thing to be done. And again, when you are looking at the effect on the Nigerian economy, it is that serious. Nigeria was producing 2.2 million barrels per day. Now it has gone down to 1.6 million barrels per day. It's very, very serious. And so to speak, about 600,000 barrels of crude oil have been lost in this attack. And if you're looking at the pipelines, the blasting here, once you see that blast taking place, of course, there's this pillage, villages, water, everything affected. The environment is always affected. Electricity is affected, and once there's no electricity, virtually every facet of life is affected. And you see business is being done using generators. It's really serious. And of course, the ripple effects on even buying and selling services, it also affected transportation. People are just simply feeling the heat.
I was speaking to Ben Shemang in Abuja.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The United Nations said on Tuesday that about 50,000 people have fled a town in Niger's troubled southeast after deadly attacks by Boko Haram insurgents. The attacks that began on Friday also left 26 soldiers, including two from neighboring Nigeria, dead. So could it be that Boko Haram has decided to take its terror campaign to other countries other than the ones that we know, that is Nigeria and Cameroon? To answer that, I spoke to Manji Cheto, Vice President, Tenio Intelligence and a Risk Analysis Organization in London.
Well, it's quite clear that the issue of border porosity in the Lake Chad region, which encompasses Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad, was always going to be make the region, other neighboring countries to Nigeria and Cameroon quite vulnerable. And I think this recent development does confirm that border porosity remains the biggest risk for all the countries. And I think the message certainly for the authorities in all those four countries is that so long as one country is under attack from Boko Haram, all of them will remain quite vulnerable and in, by extension, really remain under attack. So I think the threat is definitely not there. People have taken their attention away from it because Boko Haram has moved this sort of theater of war away from Nigeria. But for me, the risk has always remained. And I think this is just a reminder of that.
Niger has vowed to avenge for the deadly attack by the insurgents that claimed 24 of its soldiers. How challenging is it going to be for it in case it decides to take on the militants without involving other countries like Chad, Nigeria and Cameroon?
It will be incredibly difficult for Niger to unilaterally deal with this threat, as the example in Nigeria has shown. I mean, Nigeria was trying to unilaterally deal with the Boko Haram threat for more than 6 years. That effort proved quite abortive, and it was obvious that the turning point in the security outlook in Nigeria came as a result of cooperation with neighboring Chad, Niger, and Cameroon, including Benin. And so I think it would be such a mistake for Niger to think that they can also unilaterally deal with this threat. The biggest challenge, however, for the Nigerian authority will be to convince their neighbors that they also should support Niger in its time of need, considering especially that a country like Nigeria, which is the biggest of all the four countries, is also dealing with security challenges now in its oil-producing region in the south.
Do you see any effect that the multinational joint task force against Boko Haram has been making?
I think, you know, the overall, if you look at the overall trend of fatalities across the Lake Chad region, it has certainly decreased. And there are a number of factors for this. I think better cooperation, so the multinational joint task force has been quite significant in that. But also I think that's a reflection of the fact that Boko Haram has effectively pillaged the area, creating a food crisis, which the militant group is now also a victim of. So I think these two factors have definitely contributed to the sort of diminished threat, but it's not a completely contained threat. And I think so long as the militant Islamist group has got the ability to attack even the smallest regions around the border at the Lake Chad area, then all the four countries remain vulnerable to further attacks.
Now, terror groups, including Boko Haram, do scale up attacks in the month of Ramadan. How prepared are countries that have been involved in the fight against such organization, especially in West Africa, at this moment when Ramadan period has begun?
I think, you know, again, given that this is Boko Haram has been operating in the Lake Chad region for close to 7 years now, as I said, I think that countries have become a bit more operationally sophisticated and operationally ready to deal with the challenge. But of course, given that Boko Haram continues to rely on the element of surprise and unconventional warfare, they are certainly going to be cases where there will be security lapses. And so I think that, unfortunately, the recent attacks in the Diffa region in Niger might not be the last that we will see of deadly attacks in the Ramadan period.
I was speaking to Manji Cheto, Vice President, Tenure Intelligence, a risk analysis organization in London. And you're still listening to Africa Link program, coming to you straight from our studios here in Bonn. I'm Isaac Mugabe. Still to come on the program, Amnesty International accuses the Malawian police of failing to protect people with albinism. Plus, our weekly opinion segment. Don't go away.
Behind the headlines.
Now, over 1,000 students recently graduated at a polytechnic in Tamale over the weekend. The initial excitement was great, but it was quickly overshadowed by the fear of unemployment. For years now, the government has advised graduates to focus on job creation as opposed to seeking employment within the public service. However, this has left many graduates frustrated as the majority don't have starting capital to venture into profit-making ventures. From Northern Ghana, Maxwell Souk reports.
It is an atmosphere charged with brass band music to mark the graduation of over 1,000 students of the Tamale Polytechnic. They are being honored with higher national diploma certificates in various fields of studies. Both the graduates and their families are beaming with smiles at this moment. But beyond the great smiles lies a deep worry for nearly all of them: unemployment. Fusheni Mutaru studied accountancy in this institution, and I ask him where he's heading to after acquiring his diploma.
I'm out to hustle because I don't know of any job. I'll just come out and be hustling. Frankly, job in Ghana here, unless you know somebody at the highest position.
Fusheni is referring to a wide perception that in Ghana, jobs are offered on grounds of who you know, but not on how much qualified one is for the job. Another graduate, Mohammed Sadat, also paints a gloomy picture of any job prospect.
See, now our hustle starts right after you finish your national service. You start worrying, you start thinking, your family, yourself, understand?
Ghana produces thousands of qualified graduates each year, but many of them end up with no formal employment. It is estimated that up to 271,000 graduates are currently unemployed in Ghana. Jobs in the public sector are particularly difficult to get. But it is not doom and gloom for everyone. Joseph Dubik recently got employed as a finance officer at a public clinic in Tamale. He says graduates need to hit the road running.
I didn't sit down after I complete. I started something that pushed me to join some company, though it was private. But later, I think the knowledge I acquired from what I was doing, self-effort I was doing, has led me to gain the, gainful employment.
But encouraging words like this from Dubik don't seem to make any sense to the ever-increasing number of unemployed graduates. Ghana's private sector is not flexible enough to absorb graduates. The desire to create a job for the youth seems more like a pipe dream at the moment because of the difficulty involved in securing loans to start businesses. This situation has left some of the graduates caught between a rock and a hard place.
There are expectations from home. Now you've graduated, responsibilities. You are expected to cater for yourself. And if you couldn't do that, what's the evidence?
If you turn into a criminal, they arrest you. If you stay in the house, your family will be so disappointed in you for investing so much in you without bringing anything into the house, like a job and returns. So what do we do?
Maxwell Sue compiled that report from Northern Ghana.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
Amnesty International has accused the Malawian police of failing to protect people with albinism who are targeted for their body parts which are used in magical potions and other ritual practices. In a statement released on Wednesday, the rights group said Malawian authorities had failed to protect the albinos, leaving them at the mercy of criminal gangs who hunt them down for their body parts for ritual purposes. Since November 2014, at least 18 people with albinism have been killed in Malawi. Amnesty is now calling on the Malawian government to do more to protect albinos in the country. This report by Jan Philip Schluter has been adapted for Africa Link by Crispin Mwakideu.
According to the human rights organization Amnesty International, at least 18 albinos have been murdered in Malawi in less than 2 years. The Malawian police also have documented more than 60 violent attacks on people living with albinism. The real figure is probably much higher. Criminals prey on what they refer to as the white blacks, a derogatory term for albinos. They kill them and sell them to traditional healers. Even graves where albinos have been buried are frequently looted. Boniface Massa is the director of the Association of Albinos in Malawi. As an albino, he says he is used to getting mocked, marginalized, and confronted with prejudice.
We are being targeted, we are being killed like any animal. And it has even complicated our day-to-day activities in terms of going to school, getting to work, and even trusting people around us. So it is really very worrisome moment for us. This has really shocked us and has brought a lot of fear in our lives.
According to the UN, there is a lucrative black market for this cruel and inhumane practice. An entire albino body can fetch up to 66,000 euros. One leg can cost nearly 2,000 euros. That's a lot of money in an impoverished country like Malawi. The prospect of acquiring quick money fuels the barbaric hunt for albinos, says Simeon Mawanza of Amnesty International.
I've seen images of the victims, and these are images that I would not want to show anyone else because they are gruesome. You just wonder what goes into the head of the person who commits such a crime.
The widespread belief in superstition in Malawi is to blame for the brutal hunting and the macabre trade of albino body parts. Many people believe that albinos are not living beings, but spirits. Moreover, they believe that their body parts bring good luck and prosperity. Some even believe that the bones of albinos are made of pure gold. Ever since the myth that you can get rich by selling albino parts spread, many of them now live in constant fear. Simeon Mawanza again.
Baby Whitney, who was abducted from a room where she was sleeping with her mother. She was just under 2 years old. A few days later, they found some piece of the skull, some teeth, and some bloodied diapers, which were identified by the mother as belonging to the child. There are five suspects who have been arrested. One of the suspects that has been arrested is the father to the child.
Amnesty International accuses the Malawian government of not doing enough to protect albinos. Offenders are usually released after paying a few dollars. During a recent interview with BBC, Malawian President Peter Mutharika said attacks on albinos made him feel ashamed of his country.
It's superstition and complete foolishness and ignorance. You know, as a leader, I feel terrible. There's no question about it. I feel terrible to be a leader of this country. And I feel ashamed.
Mutharika has announced plans to send officials to neighboring Tanzania to learn from their experiences. Tanzania had a similar problem of deadly attacks on albinos, which led the government to ban the traditional healers.
A report by Jan Philip Schluter.
Opinion.
And in our opinion question this week, we go back to our top story. President Muhammadu Buhari has directed a reduction in military activities in the Niger Delta region to pave way for dialogue with a militant group, Niger Delta Avengers. Will this prevent further attacks on oil pipelines? Tell us what you think by sending your opinion to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW53110 Bonn, Germany, or by SMS to country code 49160957-59510, and we will read some of your comments right here on Africa Link.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter. dw.com/AfricaLink.
And now a reminder of some of the stories that we've covered for you. President Muhammadu Buhari has directed the suspension of military activities in the Niger Delta region to pave way for dialogue with the Niger Delta Avengers militant group. The United Nations has said that about 50,000 people have fled a town in Niger's troubled southeast after deadly attacks by Boko Haram insurgents. Amnesty International has accused Malawian police of failing to protect people with albinism who are targeted for their body parts, which are used in magic potions and other ritual practices. And in other news, Kenya has banned demonstrations by the country's opposition, which has been calling for the disbandment of the Electoral Commission. We shall have more on that story later. Just to remind you, in case you'd like to comment on the stories that we've covered, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW53110 Bonn, Germany, or by SMS to country code 49160957-59510. For more news, visit our website, dw.com/Africa. And I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.